Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Chris on IMTM Worldwide Radio, and this is Around the ATL. This is the NFL Draft Review Show for the Atlanta Falcons. 646-652-4479 is the number. Don't forget, you can call into this particular show. Now, tonight is going to be very interesting, but before I get into anything at all, let's kind of go through a little housekeeping as per usual. And thanks for all who are going to watch tonight live and after the fact, which tonight's probably going to be after the fact because I didn't even get to really promo this show, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But first and foremost, I do want to say my condolences to those who lost loved ones and those affected by the shootings in Atlanta recently. It's just some tragic things going on in the city of Atlanta, all over the place, whether it be Buckhead, Midtown, Decatur, just wherever it might be, there's stuff going on a lot. So those who have lost loved ones, again, my condolences, and just hope everybody can it's just sad right now. So wanted to say that right off the bat. Now, that being said, I am a little under the weather tonight. Didn't anticipate it. But I'm going to get through it, though. I'm going to get through it. Now, the 2023 NFL draft is over. How did the Falcons do? Are you excited for the new players, the new season? Do you feel they got the best players? Did the Falcons fill the needs that they had? How do you feel about the undrafted players that they signed after the fact? Are the Falcons ready for long-term winning? All right. And did any of our predictions from the first draft show that we did before the draft even come true? All right. So tonight we're definitely going to talk Falcons. Again, thanks for watching. Now, if you're watching, of course, so make sure you subscribe to the IMTM Worldwide Radio page. That will help a lot in regards to the show. If you're listening, make sure you go back and listen to all of our previous podcasts. They're on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Odyssey, Spreaker, Blog Talk Radio, Alexa even. You can follow on all of those particular platforms and outlets. You can follow IMTM Worldwide Radio on Facebook and Instagram, and you can also follow on Twitter, Intellect ATL and Jordan23 on Twitter. Tonight's sponsor, again, I think I have it scrolling. Let's check, make sure. Price Design Club, yeah. So Price Design Club, you see there, is the original designer of the first Around the ATL logo from 4 years ago, plus the current one, as you can see on the shirt there. In the corner up there. Make sure you contact them because they are really professional. They're timely. and they get it right. Okay. So make sure if you need something that has to be presented in front of people for your business or product or service or whatnot, make sure you hit up Price Design Club on Instagram. Also, they're the ones who created the first T-shirt. I just mentioned it, but they created the first T-shirt for Around the ATL. So make sure you go visit them on Instagram. Make sure you let them know Around the ATL sent you. Now, all that being said, let's see if we are ready. Yes, we are. So let's go ahead and bring in our co-host. He's a longtime Atlanta Falcons fan and Atlanta sports fan, for that matter, overall. He's written and published articles for Sports Illustrated Bulldog Maven, FanSided, and other platforms. He loves Atlanta sports. Let's go ahead and bring in our co-host for tonight, Mr. Jordan Jackson. Jordan, what's going on, man?
What's up, sir? Glad to be on Around the ATL tonight. Got a whole lot to talk about when concerning this Atlanta Falcons draft. As you can see, I am just leaving work, so I still have the shirt and tie on instead of being in more sport gear. But that's all right because, you know, this is a very serious time when you're talking about what we're drafting as far as building blocks for this team going forward. And, you know, I just, like I said, just got a whole lot to chop it up about in that regard. Shout out to Falcons Twitter and all those people who listen to us out there. You know, we appreciate it. We certainly appreciate it. And, you know, we may not all – I certainly don't agree with all of you guys. We've been going back and forth on Twitter all week since the draft. But call the show. You know, we love to hear – you know, different of opinions, as long as you keep it clean, because this is a family show. And we'd be happy to, you know, just debate these draft picks and the whole team building aspect. With that said, sir, let's talk about these Atlanta Falcons draft picks.
All right, come for me for a second, because I'm actually hitting up a couple people here. Hey, guess what? By the way, there's nothing wrong with you being Dapper Dan now, Jordan. Don't be showing me up now. You make me have to change Tony's clothes and stuff. I'm like, hey, all right, Jordan, all right.
It was not my intention, sir. My apologies.
No worries. All right, so that being said, yeah, let's go ahead and get into it, but let's do it properly as usual. Here we go.
Yeah. Welcome to Atlanta, home of them dirty birds. Anybody hating, get kicked to the curb. Any other team is absurd. Wearing black, white, silver. Red is for the blood. No one's scared of getting dirty, cause we came from the mud and we hungrier than ever. He rides, she rides, we rise together. Birds of a flock, more like birds of a feather. No one hit a party until we get the Lombardi. When we giving up, never. Scratch it off your wish list, mark it on your calendar. H-Town players never playing with no amateurs. 80,000 strong and the fans all screaming. We get knocked down and we coming up swinging and we putting in work. All done in brotherhood, yeah, we like family and ATL.
All right, so I'm kind of going to do this a little bit different than the last time we did a draft review show. So we're going to see if it works or not. I'm trial and erroring this on the fly a little bit tonight, y'all. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through the actual picks that we have. We're going to go through some details, and then we're going to go from there. We're going to give you an opportunity to call in 646-652-4479 and or hit up on the chat line. So again, if you're a Falcons fan, you watching this, if you happen to be watching this right now, whether it be Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or whatever, make sure you tweet it, share it to a couple of people. We would appreciate that. But like I said, I've been a little ill, so I didn't get to really like put it out like I usually do. So if you can help me out there, we're also going to talk about a little bit of other stuff too besides football. We'll sprinkle that in a little bit later, a little bit as a surprise, but we'll get to that. So let's see if we can get this new thing to work. Like I said, I'm going to try it out and see if we can make it happen. Give me a second here. Bear with me. So the NFL draft for the Atlanta Falcons did start in the first round. We had the number 8 pick in the draft, actually. And in that particular case, we selected Mr. Bijan Robertson, running back from the University of Texas. So let's go ahead and go, you know, take a little bit of a look of the young man and see what we got.
It'll be Robinson, and he finds a running lane. What a sweet move to the second level and beyond. Touchdown, Bijan Robinson. Off right side run and out into the open along the sideline. That's Bijan Robinson who stayed in bounds.
Robinson, what a first by Bijan. Robinson, second level, one man to beat.
So that was Mr. Bijan Robinson. And so with the number 8 pick, we did pick him. And so I did want to kind of go through, you know, basically on the college side, and then Jordan's going to add to that right after me. So let's get started with that part. So Robinson, University of Texas. I'm just going to go through a little bits and pieces here. 3,400 yards total in his rushing career. 6.3 yards average, had 33 touchdowns. He's also a great receiver, 60 receptions for 805 yards, 13 yards per catch, had 8 touchdowns total. Over 4,200 yards from scrimmage, over 7 yard per carry average from yards from scrimmage. So that was his college career. Jordan, what did they say in regards to his draft profile overall?
Well, one of the things I've heard, you know, great reviews about Bijan Robinson. I've heard one scout say that they believe that he's the best running back to come out since Saquon Barkley. I heard another scout say that they believe that he's even better than that, that he's the best running back prospect to come out since Adrian Peterson. You know, great vision, able to change directions on a dime, quick with his cuts, has the power to run over people as well. Not necessarily the best pass blocker, but as a guy who's willing to stick his head down and make pass blocks, a guy who they think could possibly be one of the better pass blocking running backs. Also, as you mentioned, great hands, also even as well as great route runner, that can catch not only from lined up in the backfield, but you can actually line him up in the slot, you know, on the outside of the wide receiver position and throw him the football there. So definitely a versatile weapon, a guy who can beat you in a variety of ways. And, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, how do we want to use him in conjunction with the other talent we have, sir.
Exactly. So now, pros and cons. Now, of course, this wasn't necessarily the pick I anticipated in regards to the fact that, you know, just saying, there were some people coming out of this particular draft, and, you know, the Falcons have long-term needs that have needed to be filled for a long time to perpetuate long-time winning, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Now, one argument I want to mention right off the bat, just because I don't want to forget it, is the premise in regards to comparison to Tyler Allgeier in regards to we had him as a running back, as Jordan has pushed a long time now over and over again, as a person that has broken a 40-plus year rookie rushing record for the Atlanta Falcons in his rookie season. And as I mentioned, he did that in only 7 starts and being a 1,000-yard rusher, which we haven't had in a long time. When I say a long time, I mean it, right? So when you're talking about that part of it, I want to mention this right here. Now, I just mentioned earlier Bijan Robinson's college career as far as his touchdowns and yards and things of that nature. 3,400 yards, 6.3 yards per rush, 33 total touchdowns, right? He did that in 539 rushes, okay, in 3 seasons. Tyler Allgeier, who was picked, I believe, 45th a year ago, I believe somewhere in there, right? He 2,900 yards. So Bijan Robinson had more yards, obviously. 6.4 yards per rush, so right there even. He had 36 touchdowns. He did that in 432 rushes, and he did that in two seasons. Just throwing it out there as far as that part. Now, he wasn't really used as a receiver there in college, so you can't really compare that part. But just on the comparison side, they both kind of match up as far as rushers go right there, right? And so when you're talking about picking a running back, when you just had a running back basically launch his career as a Falcon and did really good in less games as a starter in the NFL, I think, again, when you're talking about filling a need, I just feel, and a lot of people feel this, that going on the defensive line side of the ball would have been the appropriate choice in this particular case. So that's why we're going to talk about pros and cons. Just throw it out there. If you want to chop it up as far as this goes, 646-652-4479, if you see the number scrolling across the screen. Now, at the same time, of course, we're not saying that he is not a great player. We're not saying that at all. We've never said that. It's just a matter of, was it the appropriate pick per the history of our team going forward and in the past as far as filling in blank? So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So, Jordan, go ahead and you move forward, sir.
Okay, one quote I have here, and it's by an anonymous personnel executive for an NFC team. He says he has the eat. The more carries he gets, the more damage he does. I know it's not popular, but I would draft him in the first round and get him to rock as much as I possibly could. He's a much tougher runner than Saquon Barkley was coming out. Just a few to hit on strengths and weaknesses some more, which kind of hit on some of these already. Three down, this is by Lance Zierlein of NFL.com. Three down back with exceptional talent in all phases. Owns a variety of footwork tools to alter pace, direction, and power. Feet are fast and fully connected with his vision for optimal results. Resets run track with sudden jump cuts against penetration. Runs low to the ground and possesses rare contact balance. Has the ability to stack moves. Adds a level of unpredictability to his carries. Pinballs off of angle strikes and can rip through leg tackles. Pairs instant burst with top-end speed, which that top-end speed is a 4.46 in the 40-yard dash, by the way. Finishes runs with authority, soft hands, and a nightmare to deal with on wheel route. Few weaknesses here. Might need to quicken his operation time against speedy NFL defenses. In other words, sometimes he has a tendency to maybe mess around the backfield a little bit too long, trying to look for the big, you know, hole or the home run chance to open up, which, you know, it may not ever open up in the NFL. Occasionally looks to better deal run lanes when he should be finishing. Needs to run with a more decisive plant and go mentality. Needs more consistent urgency and pass protection duties, as I mentioned, you know, kind of as I mentioned prior before. So that's just a little bit more on the strengths and weaknesses of Bijan Robinson. As you said, I mean, I like the player. I think he's going to be a very good running back. But I just question why we would do this in the top eight. This makes the third straight year in a row that we've drafted an offensive skill position player in the top eight. And as I was just talking about on Twitter recently, of the top 10 defenses in NFL history, scoring-wise, zero of those top 10 offenses, I meant to say, of the top 10 offenses, zero have won the Super Bowl in that year they scored, you know, that record-setting amount of points. Zero. Some of them went to the Super Bowl and lost, but not a one of them won. On the adverse of the top 10 defenses in NFL history, five of those top 10 defenses won the Super Bowl, you know, that year that they had that great defense. So it just doesn't quite make sense to me to continue to build an offensive team. You think you want to, you know, build kind of towards what works, but instead we seem to always go against the grain, and unfortunately it hasn't quite worked out for us yet. And it's not like I'm saying that, you know, you don't need an offense to win, because you certainly do. But I think, you know, you either got to have a really great offense and a defense that's above average, you know, in other words, ranked higher than 16 typically, or you need a balanced offense and defense. You know, your offense, where your offense and defense are both ranked like 8 or something like that. And I just think we have a lot farther to go on the defensive side of the ball, to the offensive side of the ball, so I just didn't understand it. As you mentioned, you know, Tyler Allgeier, he broke a rookie rushing record set by William Andrews in 1979. That's 43 years ago, sir. And you know, my thing was, okay, well, if he can do that his rookie year by starting only 7 games, then I expect him to be even better the next year and even stronger. But now, I mean, I don't know how they're going to split these carries. And, you know, basically a lot of the fans have already moved on from Tyler Allgeier. Nobody's talking about him anymore. It's all about Mr. Bijan Robinson. And it's just kind of sad to see, you know, for Tyler's sake, with as well as he played and the way he came on last year, sir. And one more point here, okay, the past 14 Super Bowl participants, Chris, have averaged 43 sacks per season, okay? We had 21 sacks last year. Okay, Philadelphia Eagles, who lost the Super Bowl last year, had a league-high 70 sacks. If you combine our sack totals from the last 3 seasons combined, that number is 67, Chris. And so that's the area I would have been trying to address. Guys that could win up front defensively before anything else.
646-652-4479 is the number. I see a 7166 number. Don't go anywhere. I'll be pulling you into the show soon. I wanted to mention the fact that, one, you do build from the trenches. All the successful teams have done that over time. We've seen that. Number two, we've seen in Super Bowls a lot more of a defensive play being involved in the reason that a team has won the Super Bowl much more than an offensive play typically, because one way or the other, you either are getting a stop to end the game or you're getting a stop to give your offense a chance to score one more time usually, right? And if you look at the last few Super Bowls, look at the actual rushing yards of running backs in those games. There's not too many times where the running back is the standout player of that game that says that tells you point blank, here's the reason why you won that Super Bowl. Because otherwise, the Buffalo Bills would have 4 Super Bowls in a row because they had Thurman Thomas, right? Just to throw out an example just out there as far as that goes. So think about that just on that basis. And at the end of the day, we've not had a good defense over 10, 15 years. And, you know, our former defensive coordinator has said it. We've been at the bottom of the league when it comes to that. It has to be fixed at a certain point. And to be able to fix it, you got to have the players to do it, which we haven't had. And you want the guys that were drafted last year to be able to pull in, but you need to do that multiple years, just like Philly. Philly, 2 years in a row, pulled from the national championship team. You see what I'm saying? They're going to be plush for a long time because of that, right? That's where the Falcons needed to be as far as that goes as well. That's just, again, an opinion. And, again, having a better offense does give you a little bit more leeway and things of that nature. But if you can't get to the quarterback and you can't make it easier for your quarterbacks to do their job, you know, or you don't get better quarterbacks to make it easier for the line to do their job, does that really improve the team on the offensive side of the ball long term? Because if you can't get stops, if you know the other team still gets third down conversions, it's not going to really even out. So that being said, let's go ahead and bring in our first caller of the night. Go ahead, caller, tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Miles calling out of Decatur. But
hey, what's going on,
yeah,
man?
Yeah. Oh, it's going great, man. But I wanted to talk about our draft picks and what we did, the Falcons. I think with Bijan coming, I think people are saying this wrong. He's a running back listed. But really the truth is the way this team is set up, it's set up to run 12 personnel, but our 12 personnel ain't going to be a normal 12 personnel. And most of the time we're going to run 12 personnel, but we're not going to run it like other people run it. We're going to run 12 personnel with ideas of spread. So we'll be running big tight ends and wide receivers that actually everybody can either run in the slot. Everybody can spread out. You know what you can do with our tight end. Our tight ends, both of them that we got, they both can play on the outside. So when you got options like that, you created mismatches all over the field. And that's how we need to really look at this. This is not set up like, hey, we're going to put one back over here and we're going to get him 25 touches, straight up touches. We might actually get Bijan 15 in the backfield and 10 targets on catching. You know, we might do stuff absolutely different. And this gives a play caller like Arthur Smith, particularly, the whole idea to make bad matchups for everybody all year long. And that's been his calling card anyway. You know, it's not too much a force feeding targets and just trying to make people into things that they aren't on offense. And that's his mentality. And then, two, we got to understand that most coaches, I don't care, we're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, we're talking about with every coach, if you got an offensive head coach, you better believe that you're going to put your best players on offense. If you got a defensive head coach, you're supposed to. That's the reason why I always thought Dan Quinn was bipolar, because I'm like, how in the world you're putting all this offensive talent, but you're a defensive head coach? You can never, ever achieve what you want to achieve on defense if you set up there and you basically say, I'm going to get second rate at what I do best. I never understood that. That made no sense to me at all. And that's what I like about Arthur Smith's current direction. He's staying true to his identity. And that's really the main points I really wanted to place.
Well, I appreciate that. Now, one thing I will say now, of course, obviously, is that on the offensive side of the ball, one, it gives you ball control that we've never really had in a long time also. With having a player like that, as far as the potential of the play calling and things of that nature, like you kind of mentioned, you're going to have a lot of mismatches out there, just pure and simple. And with our offensive line having a second year to be together, they should be even better at run blocking and opening up holes and things of that nature, right? So that gives you a lot more opportunities to what? Third down conversions and what? End zone, red zone, right? So that transition could play out to where whatever deficiencies we might still have on the defensive side could be negated as far as that goes. But like I said, for myself, just being personal about it, I still would rather have gone on because, well, Jordan will probably mention it a little bit later in regards to the contracts that were signed in the offseason as far as free agency on the defensive side of the ball. Not many of them were on the long-term side either. And so this was a great draft to be able to start focusing on that because – well, you just had another national championship team in Georgia and all these other players and stuff that are really high up. Are we going to get the same kind of quality coming out the next couple of drafts to be able to address the long-term side of the defensive end of the ball, so to speak? So that's one thing that just kind of stood out as far as that goes, that part.
Well, outside of, I mean, really the only person, and I know everybody feels a way about not getting Carter, but my big thing was I would have rather, if I wanted anybody from that defense, I wanted Nolan Smith. And that was the one that hurt. To me, it was, I mean, if we're talking pass rush, because when, I mean, I always think it's funny when people talk about Jalen, but Jalen is he's a push guy. Like he takes on multiple blocks. He can do those things. But to say that he's an edge, that's not really his position.
Let me interject real quick. I don't think it was a matter of people saying he was an edge. It's a matter of you can never have too much of that. You see what I'm saying? And plus two, Grady eventually is not going to be here. So you need somebody to be able to potentially replace Grady at a certain point as well. And he does that job very, very, very well. So go ahead, Jordan.
I think we need his talent, but at the same time, my philosophy with the defensive front, I just need guys who can win up front. And Jalen Carter is much more than just a push guy. He's able to beat guys quickly at the line of scrimmage to get it to the backfield. I mean, just one move, boom, quick, you know, punch, and then a move to get by the lineman. And so that's my thing. I just think you can never have too many guys that can win up front. And I like Nolan, too, but I must admit, you know, with him being injured last year, Nolan, to me, was a bit more of a risk at number eight, you know what I mean? To me, Jalen Carter, the only risk with him is these alleged character issues that's out there. But to me, there's no question about him as a player. When everybody was, all the scouts were turning on tape to look at Jordan Davis and Trayvon Walker, Jalen Carter was the guy they said they came away more impressed with than even those two guys. And Trayvon Walker was drafted first in the NFL draft in 2022. And I've heard multiple people calling him the best defensive tackle prospect because he's more of a defensive tackle in a 4-3, or he can play DN in a 3-4. He can play some DN in a 4-3, odd or even, but you don't want him on that far edge DN. You want him to be more in that 5-10 DN, the shaded inside in the even or odd defense. And so I just think, you know, you don't pass on a guy with that kind of pedigree at a position that's been a weakness for you for basically the better part of the last two decades. And that's nothing against Bijan. I think Bijan is going to be a great player. The other thing I question, though, about going so offensive heavy, and I get it, you know, offensive head coach is going to want his offensive guys, but I think you need, you know, more of a balance. And I also just question how explosive an offense can you truly be primarily based on running in a passing league?
Well, I mean, if you got mismatches, I think what we're about to see is what we saw in Tennessee. In Tennessee, that offense was pretty – it was a ball-control offense. You did see a lot of push into the end zone. You did see a lot of mismatches, and you just saw that offense move. I mean, they did put up over, like, 30 points a game. So, I mean, it can happen. It's just – it's not – what we consider right now a trend. It goes against the trend. But, I mean, outside of that, I mean, I see what you're saying. And to get back on this on defense thing, I really believe the fact that when the defensive tackle New Orleans, we got, you know, the guys we have. Yeah, I can't say his name. That's the reason why I went ahead and went the and some of the other guys that we have, I really got the feeling that they're looking at it like we spent the money on that part in the off season because we already made our decision about how we were going to go about Jalen in the short term. I don't think, for the long-term purposes, I don't think it was the best idea to go ahead and do the way we wanted to on defense. But if you got an offensive coach, I say still go with the strengths of your coaching. Do not go against that, because once you start going against that, you start ruining your identity. And then next thing you know, we'll have our personal feelings about however we've been feeling about the defense for a million years, but the coach will not be able to coach to what his skill set is.
Gotcha. Anything else before I let you go?
No, that's it. That's all.
Man, we appreciate you calling in, man. Make sure you let other people know about the show, and definitely keep in touch. We're going to be doing some other shows probably within the next week or so as far as the rest of this year. So definitely, hopefully, we get to hear you again soon. All right, man. Take care.
Appreciate the call, brother. Christian, one thing I will say about that, like what he's saying, you know what I mean? It sounds good in theory, but I haven't seen enough out of Arthur Smith to be convinced that he can actually take advantage of all of these guys, you know, that have the ability to create these mismatches. Kyle Pitts scored one touchdown his rookie year. You know what I mean? And I really haven't seen the innovative scheming to get him wide open. You think a great offensive coordinator better scheme him wide open for, you know, four or five touchdowns a year alone. And so I haven't really seen that with Kyle Pitts. So, you know, forgive me, guys, out there, if I'm skeptical that he could do the same thing with Bijan Robinson if he hasn't been able to fully take advantage of Kyle Pitts with the mismatches. Now, but maybe, you know, running back is more of his deal, so maybe. But we're talking about the passing game when you're talking about lining him up in all of these different areas. I do think we'll see a lot more big personnel where you see two tight ends, two wide receivers, one running back, you know, or one tight end and two running backs with two wide receivers. Maybe see some sets with one wide receiver and two tight ends and two backs. I think you may see sometimes you see Algier and Robinson out there together, but that's not going to be something you can run the majority of plays because either one of those guys is a blocking fullback that you want putting their head in and going up against, you know, the biggest, baddest linemen and linebackers on a regular basis blocking. So I'm interested to see how it shakes out, you know, in terms of how that goes. But, you know, I definitely question, you know, if Arthur Smith is going to be able to fully utilize all of these weapons. And, okay, if you're using both of these guys so much, Algier and Robinson, and if you're giving Robinson 10 targets in the passing game as well, like the caller said, well, is there going to be enough passes even thrown to properly utilize Drake London and Kyle Pitts? And so that's part of the problem I have with this pick, is when you look at, you know, the fact that, okay, people are telling me, well, look, you can have two good backs. You can actually feed them both enough if you run the ball enough. Well, in that case, then can you run the ball enough to feed them and throw the ball enough to feed the other two guys? We draft it in the top eight. I question that. So the pick doesn't quite make sense to me when you look at all three first-round picks consecutively, you know, as a whole, together.
Well, and that technically goes into the next pick that we had, our second pick in the draft, which was in the second round. And that was Mr. Matthew Bergeron, offensive tackle from Syracuse. Jordan, what did the league say in regards to Mr. Matthew?
Mr. Matthew Bergeron, big, strong offensive lineman. Give me a second because my stuff is loading here.
Well, actually, Jordan, hold on. Let me do this. Let me play the highlights real quick.
Okay.
Shout out to the Atlanta Falcons website for that. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yes, sir. Matthew Bergeron, big offensive tackle out of Syracuse, 6'5", 318 pounds. Actually, his hometown is Canada, which I didn't realize, Victoriaville, Quebec, Canada. And let's go to some of his strengths and weaknesses here. One of the things I was looking at to see what he did at the bench press, but fortunately he did not do the bench press at the combine. Has a lot of starting experience, both at left tackle and right tackle at Syracuse. Was in 2021 honorable all mention in terms of the all ACC team there. But some of his strengths show strong desire to oppose his will on the man across from him. His run blocking technique is top notch across the board, which definitely fits into what we like to do. Fits into his target with his hands up and his hip unlocked. Kicks or caves his blocks with rapid fire foot chop from a leveraged position. He improves his positioning through the sustained phase of the block. Body control and radar to make his blocks against second level linebackers. Quick initial slide steps to range out to a speed rush. Hips can open quickly and ride rusher up the arc, which means basically take a pass to quarterback, stays connected to rushers with quality hand latch. Weaknesses, hand placement, and pass protection can be a concern. It's inconsistent footwork get into his pass sets. Punch can swing wide, sometimes opening his chest too much, gives far too much ground to bull rushers. His punch lands high and wide, which limits natural forward anchor strength, and he needs to be careful about overshooting lateral marks as a run blocker out in the open field. One thing from the anonymous scout, we always get these quotes from, says the league has moved to pass protection as a top priority, and he's just really inconsistent in that area. I love his run blocking, but you have to be able to keep the quarterback clean, says an area scout for an NFC team, sir.
So when it comes to the needs analysis parts, a lot of people, again, this was the second consecutive pick on the offensive side rather than the going back to the defensive side of the ball. So, again, a lot of people were kind of, okay, well, all right. But since it is offensive player, it's actually on the line, you know, does that, you know, kind of come in the middle of filling a need as far as that goes? Because we know we've had some issues on that line. I don't want to say his name out loud because, you know, the skies might open up and an asteroid might hit me. But, you know, at the end of the day, does this put the Falcons in a better position than they were a year ago? So you mentioned some of his attributes there and things of that nature. For myself, and we just played some of his highlights as far as on the primarily the pass blocking, pass protection side of things. Looks like he holds up pretty well. Now, of course, that's on the college side. Can you do that in the NFL? We're going to find out real soon. But, one, he's not a small guy. That's for sure. Doggone it. He's not. And he looks pretty solid as far as that goes. He looks mean. He pancaked a couple of people there we saw. Kind of manhandled a couple of people a little bit there, too. So he definitely liked that. You know, we've always said that we've needed more of an edge from some of the players on that side of the ball as well. So that helps. On the run blocking side, obviously we're doing that zone, you know, blocking scheme and things of that nature. Is he going to be able to handle that aspect of it with the size and everything like that? Shouldn't be that big of a problem, though, I would say. So that, does that help the offensive side of the ball in the running game? I would say yes, as far as that goes. But Jordan, at the end of the day, do you believe that, you know, best foot forward, you know, with this being the second pick, this is pick number 38, but our second pick of the draft, was it still a matter of could we have gone a little bit on the better side of the defensive side of the ball with players that might have been available at that point rather than waiting until our third pick picking, you know, who we – we'll get into that. Don't mention them. But what do you just think is as far as that goes, as far as using another offensive player on that side of the ball? Is it going to be an advantage, disadvantage? What do you think?
Well, as far as this pick goes, it was surprising on one way because this is the most offensive we've gone early in the draft since Terry Fontenot took over. Every season we have picked an offensive skill position player in the top eight. But then the first 2 years we turned around and went defense with Richie Grant in round two, Terry Fontenot's first year, 2021. 2022, the pick was Arnold Ibiketie, was the very next pick. And in fact, the next two picks were defense in that scenario where we went with Troy Anderson next last year. But instead, we decided to go offense with both picks back-to-back. With that being said, I do understand it because we certainly needed that left guard position was the only spot on the offensive line that's in question. We know, I'm going to say his name, this Jalen Mayfield was probably one of the worst NFL football players I've ever seen the time he started. Playing left guard some of the time last year before he got hurt. And when he got hurt, that spot was kind of a rotating spot. We saw Matt Hennessy play that spot some. We saw Cody Gossett play that spot some. And so I certainly understand trying to go ahead and show up the offensive line. The guy who I think we passed on that I would have liked to have seen, ideally that picked me, is edge rusher B.J. Ojulari out of LSU. He's the brother of Azeez Ojulari, former Georgia Bulldog, who we also passed on in 2021 in favor of getting safety Richard Grant. So that would have been an ideal pick for me, but I do understand it. And like I said, you know, make no mistake about it, Bergeron is going to play guard in the NFL. And so that's one of my concerns, is that he has zero starts at guard in college. And so, you know, how quickly can he learn that position moving inside? Everybody you know, just usually acts like it's so easy to move a good tackle inside the guard. But that's not always the case. You know what I mean? When a guy is used to playing one spot, you know, over a span of years with zero snaps inside. The the positive thing I want to mention about him, though, is several different places I saw it said that he plays to the echo of the whistle. And the two Atlanta Falcons that was said about the most in the past was two of the nastiest linemen we ever had, and that was that right side a few years back with Harvey Dahl at right guard and Tyson Clabo at right tackle. That was what was always said about those guys. They played to the echo of the whistle. So that's certainly a positive that I like about Mr. Matthew Bergeron.
So in that particular case, again, when we're talking about, you know, offense, defense, and everything like that, the more you do give your offense a chance to, again, what was one of our issues over the last couple of years, converting a third down. So whether it be keeping the quarterback clean long enough for him to complete that pass and or making that hole just a little bit bigger for us to actually convert a third and three where we can rush the ball, how much easier would our lives be if you could do that a few more times a game? A few more times a game could be the difference between winning and losing the game sometimes, right? Especially in a close game. One of the things that we do talk about, we have mentioned, I should say, is that last year, actually John Harris had mentioned it in our draft show the other week prior to the draft, was that...
Shout out to John Harris.
Shout out to John. Hopefully he gets a call in. Let me check and make sure. I was about to say, make sure he wasn't holding that long. The Falcons didn't give up a lot of points last year, okay? So, but at the same time, we couldn't stop people on third down, and we couldn't stop the run. So that continued the drives of a lot of different people to where that gave the other team more of a chance to, at the end of the day, win the game than we did. What we want to have happen this year is not to allow that to happen anymore as far as giving that quarterback on the other side a chance to convert their third down. Right? That's going to be one of the biggest things. Again, we only had 21 sacks. That tells you what happened last year. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times we had teams stopped right up to the hill until that one play, and the quarterback's out there making bacon pancakes, blueberry muffins, and fresh orange juice, freshly squeezed, and then he throws the ball, right?
Yeah, rapid 16 bars, all of that.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? So if that can slow down, that'd be one thing. So, but if we're not able to do that on our side of the ball, on the offensive side of the ball, yes, it's going to be very important that we scheme to where we control the ball the whole game. Because if we do that, and yes, if you can keep the other team's offense off the field longer, that does give your defense a better chance to, you know, make stops or just do what they need to do job wise. Because we do have A.J. still. We do have Grady still. We do have the young guys from last year, like Troy Anderson is going to get his shot. AK-47 is going to be getting his shot, things of that nature. So in a second season of being coached up and things of that nature, that can bear out. Like I said, I'm also looking at the long-term effects as far as what happens when those one-year contracts are gone. Where are going to be the replacements? Are we going to be looking at free agency again? Or I keep talking to Jordan about this. Are we going to get Nick Bosa? You know, can we do it? Can we pull it off, right? Or are we looking at Montrez Sweat as a possible defensive lineman from the edge who are both in their primes, 26, 27 years old, right? So you can have them for the next 5-6 years possibly to fill in that gap, possibly. Maybe that's what they're looking at for next year because we're going to have money. We got money coming, you know, still. So that's a little bit as far as that goes. But as far as Matthew goes, definitely just on the football side, looks like a very solid pick. Is going to help us out long term as well, because we're going to have other players on our team, you do have players on our team getting older. He's on the end. Jordan, help
Jake
me out.
Jake Matthews.
Yeah, he's go ahead.
One thing I do want to say here is the NFL comparison, according to Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, for Mr. Bergeron is Joe Bitonio, the offensive guard for the Cleveland Browns. And Bitonio has made the Pro Bowl 4 straight years. So if he turns out to be Bitonio, it's a darn good pick. I like the pick. My only thing I question, you know, as long as he's not a complete liability in pass protection, then it's going to be a good pick, because I'm confident he's going to be a good run blocker. at the NFL level. Just to back up real quick, too, as far as Bijan Robinson, the NFL comparison that Zuerlein gave for him is the Raiders running back Josh Jacobs. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he might have been the leading rusher in the league this past year. He was close if he wasn't. I mean, he had a great year. So those are just the two NFL comparisons for the picks that we've covered so far with four more to go.
All right. So that being said, let's go ahead and continue our transition throughout tonight's show. So with our third pick of the draft, but the actual 75th pick overall in the draft, we're going to have Zach Harrison, edge rusher from Ohio State, and we're going to look at some of his highlights now. And shout out to the Atlanta Falcons page for that highlight. So when it comes to Mr. Harrison, let's just throw out a couple of things in regards to his career. Overall, for his four seasons at Ohio State, he had 58 solo tackles, 24 tackles for loss. He had 11 sacks overall. He did have one interception. He was able to get some fumbles in there as well. I can't find that for some reason. But overall, one, competition-wise, of course, he's in the conference that you can't say that he didn't have competition. Can't say that, right? And so now it's a matter of, per what he can do in his skill set, can he be coached up to play for the NFL side of things in regards to the blockers he's going to be facing? Schemes that are going to be put up against him to be able to prevent him from getting to the quarterback, can he adjust? Now, we do know because of our new defensive coordinator, who's a specialist on the defensive line, he's going to have an advantage that he wouldn't have had if we had stayed, you know, I guess, where we were at as far as that going. I think we're going to be wide open when it comes to that a little bit. So I do feel good as far as that goes. And he's young. He's ready to go. He looks great on film as far as that goes. Since he's going, he was picked in the third round. Of course, there's going to be people who say, "Well, again, we could have got some who were probably better earlier in the draft." But he does address the defensive line specifically in this particular pick. So let's talk pros and cons. 646-652-4479. Jordan, what's his draft profile looking like?
One interesting fact that I thought is very interesting is certainly a positive. Zach Harrison, at 36 1/4 inches, has the longest arms of any NFL defensive lineman at the scouting combine since 2014. So that's a very interesting thing and a very much a positive thing. The thing with Mr. Harrison, he has good size. 274 pounds at the defensive end. So he's not a small guy, 6'5.5". I want to say his 40-yard dash is around the 4.4, 4.47 range. Like here, they don't have an official time listed for him because I think he ran it at his pro day as opposed to the combine. As I mentioned, exceptional arm length. He uses the inside jab step to open up an outside angle as a pass rusher. Lays out to attack throwing hands for strip sacks. Yeah, so he is a very good strip sack guy. Makes well-timed challenges to bat down passes, which does reflect in the fact that he has 9 career passes deflected. Physical traits help him neutralize. utilize run blocks, able to jab, separate, and sit down to create a firm edge. Good build-up speed when racing in pursuit. The weaknesses there is he rarely gets on top of his blocker quickly. His pass rush is segmented and gradual, so it's not really fluid. Basically seems like he's thinking as he's doing these pass rush moves. Struggles with rush traditions and counter quickness. Below average mass and strength in his lower body. Lacks playmaking urgency and is a reach and grab tackler. One of the things about Harrison is he did get a lot of pressure last year for Ohio State, but he only got home for 3.5 sacks, which was 4 for the Ohio State's team. So I'm hoping that there's something, you know, our defensive coordinator, who is a defensive line coach by trade, Ryan Nielsen, I'm hoping there's something him and our staff can see that will help him, you know, correct what was causing him to get close to sacks but not quite being able to finish the deal. And he could turn it, and hopefully that will help him turn into a great edge rusher. You know, but against a third-round pick, especially when you talk about pass rushers, you know, it could be hit or miss. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm expecting this guy to be a superstar edge rusher, but it'd be nice. It's certainly a position we need somebody to pan out at. And oh, by the way, before I forget, let me see if we got an NFL. No, we actually don't have an NFL comparison for him here, so I'm going to see if I can find one on a different site for him. But, you know, just all in all, I like the pick. I just question, especially with the fact that he lacks the lower body strength, and I'm wondering if he lacks that flexibility it takes to really, you know, turn the corner and get around those tackles on the edge. Because that's often key for edge rushers, and that's why some of the bigger edge rushers struggle at times getting sacks, because they just don't have that flexibility. And when you're not able to flex and bend down and get around that edge, offensive linemen, you know, will either push you back past the quarterback or put you down on the ground, the good ones, if you don't have your technique together.
Yeah. That was something that we saw with somebody that has the first initial T and the last initial terrible. But anyway, I want to. Hold up. Okay, let me throw this one
in
here.
That's the guy that likes to talk a lot. I think you talk about the guy that likes to talk a whole lot. Do more talking than playing.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find it. I hadn't done this one in a while too. There we go. I know I was late, but I had to throw that in there. But anyway, now one thing I will say in regards to this particular pick in regards to Zach is sometimes it could be used on the positive side to where maybe he doesn't get all the way to the quarterback, but because he almost is getting there, somebody else might be getting there too. So some of that could be, you know, come into play as far as scheme in regards to pressure. You know, at a certain point, that pressure is something that we just haven't had. So if he's almost getting there, you know, and you have somebody else on the other side that is almost getting there, and you got somebody coming up the middle almost getting there, somebody should get him, right? Grab him and hold him, as Tony Baker on Instagram always saying, the comedian. Hold him and grab him or whatever he be saying, right? So that could to be a positive as far as that goes, but definitely technique-wise, we'll come into that. And he has a whole offseason to improve on strength and conditioning and things of that nature. It would be awesome if we had Chuck Smith available to be in there as a consultant or something, or a coach, right? But we don't. So we'll see what Mr. Nielsen can do in as the actual coordinator. And again, Nielsen has to be respected for the fact that that defensive line with New Orleans for a long time was a force in the NFC. And it can't be contested as far as that goes, right?
Did it hurt you to actually admit that?
I have to. No, not really, because, again, by any means necessary, we can't ever have a season where we can't get over the 30-sack mark. You know, it's when our leading person on sacks is Grady Jarrett for basically two seasons straight, that's an issue. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that is an issue, you know. So, again, and think about all the players that have come through since then, you know what I'm saying? And so we can't have that no more. Whatever happens this year, we have to have a double-digit sack guy. one way or the other, somebody has to have 10 sacks. Or we need six people with seven sacks each or something crazy. I don't know. I don't care. We just can't be 21, 19 sacks anymore. That's the whole thing. And that's one of the, again, the inferences I've been saying from the get-go as far as this particular draft is we had an opportunity to really push on that premise. You know, and it didn't go that route. So, again, every move since then has to kind of bear that out as such because, again, you have 17 games that we play now, not 16, so you got that extra game. The NFC is really in flux now with all the turnover and things of that nature. Right now, Philly has put themselves on that pedestal as basically untouchable now, right? So they're basically saying nobody in the NFC is really even a threat. So we need to make sure that they know that the Falcons can be a threat. So that's one thing, like I said, on the defensive side and being a stopper team, we need to be able to show that we can do that. That's what I'm hoping for. So this could be the first move in that as far as that goes. Anything else on Mr. Zach?
Yeah, real quick, I do have some more on Mr. Zach. I just want to do, because, you know, this pass rush is such an important position, and it's, you know, what I've been wanting us to draft. So another scout that I really like to read his stuff, and the website is the Draft Network, and a scout by the name of Joe Marino. And he just has a few quick, simple things. He says the top reasons to buy in on Harrison are length and stature, athletic profile, and flashes of dominance. Reasons for concern, college underachiever, inconsistent play speed and recognition, which is very important, and tightness, which is what I talk to in terms of having that flexibility to really bend the corner and get to the quarterback. But then again, you know, and obviously he's a different caliber prospect coming out. The same thing was said about Mr. Montez Sweat, you know, that he didn't quite have the flexibility needed to get around the corner. And he's a consistent, you know, 7 to 9 sack guy every year. You know, it's just interesting. I did say I was going to get an NFL comparison as well. Yatur Gross-Matos in the 2020 NFL draft is the guy who Joe Marino compares him to, says ideal role defensive end that can occasionally slide inside on passing downs. Scheme fit can see appeal in a penetration style or gap control defense. And the grade he gave him was a 79.5 out of 100. Which is a third round value for him. So, just to let you know, he watched full game tape 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games in order to come up with, you know, his scouting report. So that's pretty nice sample size, you know, right there, looking at 7 games over 2 different seasons there. So, interesting, you know, prospect. Definitely have hopes for him. But, you know, still a little skeptical that we waited so late to address pass rush. I had a guy, you know, put his stats up against Nolan Smith's stats in college on Twitter recently and basically was making the case that Harrison was either better than Nolan Smith or just as good. But when I dug a little bit deeper, the man played 360-something more snaps than Nolan Smith did. So that's a big reason for the discrepancy. And people say, well, you know, that's a knock on Nolan because he should play more. Well, that was only by playing 2 more games. You know, the fact of the matter is UGA just rotates their linemen a lot more than most other schools do, their front guys, plus the fact that UGA blows a lot of people out.
Yeah.
So those guys are sitting on the bench quite a bit at the end of the games against some of these lesser opponents. And so they're just not going to have the numbers. So, you know, that's one thing. People shouldn't be scared off by the fact that Georgia guys don't produce some of the biggest numbers because they –
they've done their job at the beginning of the game, and the other team doesn't have a chance to win, and so they get the rest because they did their job.
Right. Plus, with the Georgia pass rushers, there's often the situation of a meeting happening at the quarterback. You know what I mean? And when you got a jailbreak like that, only one guy can get credit for the sack each time. Or, you know, sometimes you get a half a sack by 2 guys. And so, you know, there's not going to be often one guy with a whole bunch of sacks, you know, in that scenario, but, you know you're getting a solid, well-coached football player in that case. But I'm excited about the pick. I like, you know, some of his traits. I'm just hoping, you know, that this is where Ryan Nielsen can make his money at because we certainly need a guy to develop edge rush guys on this team.
Indeed. 646-652-4479. We've gone through the first three picks of the Falcons draft. Let's go ahead and start on the second half of their draft right now. So with the 113th overall pick in the NFL draft, the Atlanta Falcons pick Clark Phillips, the third cornerback out of the University of Utah. Let's go ahead and check out some of his highlights from the past college seasons. Again, shout out to the Atlanta Falcons website for that highlight. So Clark Phillips III was actually definitely someone that we talked about last week in our draft show, to where if we had a chance to be able to get him, we need to get him. Okay. Let me talk about him a little bit in regards to his overall career, and then we'll get started. I'm on the wrong page. Here we go. So there we go, Clark Phillips. So in Utah, he had 83 solo tackles in his three seasons. I'm sorry, I just went blank there. 110 tackles total. That's solo and assisted. Passes where he ended up getting interceptions. Of course, he had 6 interceptions last year. He had 2 the year before that. He had 1 the year before that. So incrementally, he got better each year. 36 yards, 54 yards, 142 yards in regards to defensive interception and the yards returned. He is a ball hawk that is not a safety. So that makes him dangerous just on that basis, that he's always looking for that ball and he gets it and he actually catches it. Remember, there was players that we've had in the past where we always were talking about that. How come they can't just catch the ball? They're around it, but they can't actually intercept it. This is a young man that actually can go all the way through. Jordan, does his draft profile tell us about him?
All right. Well, first of all, Clark Phillips III, 5'9", 184 pounds, ran a 4.51 in the 40-yard dash. Student of the game is one of the things I said about him, a guy who loves to watch film. And just a student of the game of football, which is a good thing. He's definitely very physically chiseled, well built for a guy his size. Plays a bold, aggressive brand of football. He reads the quarterbacks and routes simultaneously. He attacks throws with playmaking angles and determined demeanor. Finished his career, as you mentioned, with 9 interceptions. 4 of those interceptions he returned for touchdowns. Twitchy plant and drive when reacting and responding to throws, and is very physical in tight quarters like press coverage type situations. Weaknesses, lateral transitions to shadow the route can be turbulent or choppy, allow separation against shallow crossing routes, could struggle staying connected to routes from the slot, will look to do too much sometimes in zone defense. His downfield physicality could lead to flags at the NFL level, and his short arms and legs could limit jump ball challenges and tackling in space. The scout quote for us says he's a big-time self-starter. He wants to be great. This is a West Coast scout for an AFC team who said that. NFL comparison. One of them is Mike Hilton, which is interesting. And the other NFL comparison I have here, which is very interesting, is former Ohio State quarterback Denzel Ward, who is a first round draft pick and a very good football player. Real quick, top reasons to buy in: quick feet and fluid hips. Has ball skills, competitive toughness, and coverage instincts. Top reasons for concern: lack of size, lack of tackling consistency, but it's not due to him being passive at all. It's more due to his size and playing off of contact. Instant prospect. Now, I have heard some people who are draft experts say that this guy could potentially be the steal of the entire draft. He could be one of those later round picks, you know, not first or second round picks, that ends up excelling. Now, you know, to go back into what we talked about, I probably would have addressed this whole thing differently. I would have taken Jalen Carter at number 8. Then I would have probably taken the best corner available, you know, at that second round pick. But, you know, at least we did address pass rush and corner with our third and fourth round draft picks.
Yeah. 646-652-4479 is the number. And again, folks, appreciate everybody who's watching live or will watch after the fact. Again, I wasn't feeling well tonight, so I didn't get to really promo the show at all today. But thanks for those who have been tuning in as the show progressed. Make sure you watch from the beginning and tune back in. Make sure you follow on YouTube, IMTN Worldwide Radio on the YouTube page. Make sure you subscribe, and you can follow us on Twitter. Intellect ATL is mine, and Jordan23 ATL is my co-host as well. So on this particular young man, Clark Phillips, we saw some of the highlights earlier. He's definitely going to be that person who's a dog, right? We always use that verbiage when we talk about certain players. Jordan mentioned how he wants to be great. When you have that in a player from the get-go without you having to tell him or talk it or anything like that, that puts you at an advantage to where you're putting them on the field. I believe as far as what our team is, and I actually haven't gone through the depth chart yet, but we'll do that a little bit later, I guess, if we have time. He'll be the nickel corner, I would propose, right? So when you're talking about if you have AJ, right, is that right? So if you have AJ.
Oh, yeah, I think that's right, but I say it's going to probably be a battle between him, Mike Hughes, and Alfred, who was on the squad last year.
Yeah. So when you're talking about that, let's go ahead and look at, let's see if I can find it real quick, because I actually did pull up the depth chart.
Alfred.
So you have AJ on the left side, Okuda on the right side.
When we said the name Alfred, I just started getting flashbacks with No problem.
And right now, they do have him at the nickel as the number one, and then Alfred number two after him, right? So you're talking about AJ and Okuda and Phillips being on the front side of that, and then Bates and Grant as your safeties. You know, that's some protection right there that I think if coaching and players and everything scheme is right, that also helps that defensive line, give them that one extra second to possibly get to the quarterback. So again, it was either going to be half and half or all the way one side or the other. You create the defensive line side to where the cornerbacks have an opportunity to play their game, or you get the cornerbacks to give the defensive line a chance to play their game, or you just get really good on both sides. So we have a little bit of a mixture of both possibly, because as I can say, we did have our players that got drafted last year. They're going to have another season to get better and prove themselves. But like I said, I think we're getting stronger in that area. And this is one of those picks, like Jordan said, this could be one of the steals of the draft is straight up just because his ability to get to the ball. He sees the ball. He knows where the ball is. Now, yeah, the jump ball part, that's always going to be a little bit of an issue depending on who you got playing. But usually you don't have that height advantage in that slot position usually, typically, you know. So that may come up every now and the blue moon, but maybe not enough to really make a difference. And at the end of the day, his play could negate it by the fact that the quarterback's going to have to make a perfect throw. If the quarterback makes a perfect throw, so be it. But let's see if he can do it every single time. So that, I think, kind of comes into play a little bit with this pick as well. Any other points that are interesting, Jordan?
Well, I think those are the most, you know, interesting points about him so far, like I said, the fact that he's just so strong and so aggressive, I think that could be a positive, you know what I mean? But it could also be a negative if he gets a little bit too handsy on those plays down the field. But, you know, I do agree with you that any time that you have a guy that has a knack for the football, he has a chance to do something. I mean, we've seen in the past, you know, for example, a guy like DeMonte KZ, who was a fifth round pick, if I'm not mistaken, if I can remember correctly, and he made a lot of plays. Now, injuries, you know, shortened his time of being an effective player, but hopefully, you know, that's not the case here. And, you know, he could have a great career, Clark, and be the, you know, the steal of the draft that many people think he can be. So I think, you know, he helps upgrade the collection of talent. I do think he's a balance. Interesting that he's listed at the number one spot at nickel right now, but I still think it's going to be a battle late. They probably have the other two guys listed, or a guy like Hughes, at least, is probably listed on as a backup on the outside. But I do think, you know, all of those guys that aren't starting, and there may even be a battle between Okudah and Hughes as well. But I think whoever doesn't start on the outside opposite of A.J. Terrell will all battle for the nickel spot. You know, may the best man win.
Exactly. Well, we're almost finished, y'all. We got two more picks to talk about in our NFL draft review show for 2023 for the Atlanta Falcons. And again, thanks for all who are going to watch live tonight and after the fact when you found out that we actually had the show tonight. Again, my fault for not being able to promote it. Like I said, I've been a little bit ill. But I appreciate all who are supporting the show on IMTN Worldwide Radio on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. Or if you're watching on Facebook and even on Twitter. So let's go ahead and get into our next pick. So we had 2 seventh-round picks. So our first one was pick number 224. His name is DeMarco Helms. He's a safety out of the University of Alabama. I really don't like saying the word Alabama more than once. I've said it twice already. So we'll see if we can avoid doing that in the future. Oh, goodness, I tell you, the SEC boy. But anyway, we got him. So let's see. Let's watch a little bit of highlights of our newest safety on the team. So that was some tape on DeMarco Helms. Now, one thing before I get into DeMarco a little bit, going back to Mr. Phillips, is that you have an extra person that can rush the passer in these two young men as well. I think that could come into play a little bit too. And both of them tackle just a little bit. No, they tackle. They can tackle. So that's another thing. And DeMarco hits as well. Now, Dora might mention some of those things, but those are just some things I just noted from that particular film, but also with Phillips in regards to rushing the pass or having somebody that corner blitz that we never seem to do a whole heck of a lot of in past seasons. Maybe that will start happening just a little bit more. We'll find out. So in regards to Mr. DeMarco, let's see, here we go. So tackles. Now, he played 4 seasons, well, really 3 seasons, because he didn't really play his first season as a freshman. But, yeah, 155 solo tackles, 255 combined at Alabama. He had 7.5 tackles for a loss. He had 2.5 sacks. He had 4 interceptions, okay? So he was active out there in Alabama. Again, he looks like he's not afraid to hit people. That's always a good thing, obviously, right? And again, stopping the run. The safety primarily is one of those people that helps with that run stoppage. You know what I'm saying? So that's going to come into play, I believe, as well, to where if we just had a few extra tackles last year, how much better would we have had a season if we had just had that a little bit more, too. So Bates plus this young man being in the lineup is going to help. And, again, I'll probably go through the depth chart. Hopefully we have time. But, Jordan, what was the draft profile saying about Mr. Hellums?
Well, one thing about Mr. Hellums, as you mentioned before, he is a physical tackler. You know, played a lot of ball at Alabama. One interesting fact about him is that he was actually a wide receiver in high school, played on both sides of the football then. Says a boundary safety with good size and adequate anticipation, but a lack of quality makeup burst when beaten over the top. Hellums can cover tight ends and is comfortable in split zone looks, but needs to do a much better job of staying deeper than the deepest target. He's a fairly consistent tackler, but doesn't always take the most efficient routes to the ball. He's physical and can play high or low, has a chance to become a good backup and a plus special teams player, because he definitely was a special team ace at Alabama. So that's one thing I think, you know, that if he makes the team early, it's probably going to be for his special teams play. Strengths, fits up his run defensive responsibilities, bend and wrap tackler in the open field, sifts through combination routes from high safety, anticipates and breaks quickly on throws in front of him, strikes with force over the middle, races in as a sticky tackler to limit run after the catch. Weaknesses, tight hips require time to open and transition, below average recovery burst to chase deep routes, loses ground in lateral transitions, pursuit angles and run support, lack control and leverage, gets glued for too long to blockers in space. So those are a few positive negatives there. Let me see if I got an NFL comparison on him on one of these sites here real quickly. As my other site loads up. Okay, let's see if we got an NFL comparison right here. I guess we do not. Okay, real quick, top reasons to buy in, versatile defensive back, as I previously stated, can play both free safety and strong safety, effective tackler. Reason for concerns is man-to-man coverage, mid-body tightness, a.k.a. hip transitions, and overall speed. That speed, 40-yard dash-wise, is a 4.57. In the 40-yard dash, he's 6'1", and he weighs 203 pounds. So his ideal role, I mean, you know, if he makes it to that point, they say would be a starting strong safety. His scheme fit is a defense that predominantly plays zone defense. So not quite thrilled about hearing that, because I just don't like us to play too much zone defense. But, you know, I guess it's okay if he's not asked to cover, if the other guys are manned up and he's a guy who's in the zone kind of cleaning stuff up. But, you know, as I previously stated, he's going to have to not let guys get behind him in that scenario. But, you know, anytime you're taking a guy in the seventh round, he's a project, I think, you know, I feel better about taking a project from an SEC school than I do, you know, from a lot of places. And like I said, let's see if he can make the team with his special teams play and then continue to develop from there.
Yeah. 646-652-4479 as we're winding down the show tonight. Hopefully we have a little bit of time to talk about our special topic. On the depth chart, they have him as the backup for Jesse. Jesse Bates has at free safety as of the moment. So that's, you know, as of now, that's how, it, you know, we haven't gotten to training camp, mini camp and all that kind of good stuff yet, but that's where they got him listed. Yeah, like you said, you know, you're talking about he'd be best in the zone. I'm like, I don't ever want to see zone defense play ever again in Atlanta history, ever, I swear to goodness. But, you know, so be that it may. I like what I saw on just that highlight. Now, again, that's his highlights, but that is with the University of Alabama. In the SEC highlights. So that does, you know, tell you a lot right there as far as that goes. It does address another defensive position on the team. So the other thing of it was that from one year to another, you're talking about depth. And that's why we were talking about earlier in the draft, we need that long-term depth, you know what I'm saying? And we need those players to be good. Like, why can't we have good players in different positions in different phases over time, like all these other teams that continue to win over time. Again, it's at a certain point, do you want to win or kind of win? You know, if let's put it like this. If all these moves that have been made causes us to win the Super Bowl this year, yes, go for it, you know. But we want to have a chance to win the Super Bowl this year and next year and the year after that and the year after that and the year after that. Because you have other teams that's what they've been doing for a long time. They are always in the mix. They're always listed as a contender. They have a chance. They're not listed as somebody, the defunct team or the ne'er-the-wells or whatever. Because one person, again, and I saw it posted, you know, somebody said, well, we want excitement. And I'm like, does excitement win Super Bowls? I'm just saying, you know, at a certain point, you want to win a Super Bowl? Or do you want this to be, you know, the flash and dash of it all? You know, when you're talking about someone like Tom Brady, is he excited? I've never seen him do anything really exciting, right? But he completes passes, though. You know what I'm saying? So you look at it just from that standpoint, you got to be able to win the game. That's the goal. And whatever you can do to put your team in the best position to win each and every game, that's the goal. That has to be the goal. And so when you're talking about Mr. DeMarco here, like I said, I think he gives you a chance to, you know, play around a little bit with blitzes again. You know, I feel good about that. And again, his highlights, you can see he's done that a little bit as well. But just like I say, he's not afraid to hit nobody. You know, and when you're playing that particular position, you can't be. You know, and we're talking about stopping the run primarily. Breaking tackles. We always have those issues for some reason. Now, some of that is coaching, but some of that is just the players too, right? So hopefully this will help as far as the depth. And if he feels that need, you know, we're going to look good as far as that goes. I mean, I'd like to pick in this case. I mean, it's a seventh-round pick, right? But he's a seventh-round pick from Alabama. He's been coached by one of the greatest of all time, right? So I hate saying that too, but it is what it is, whatever. You know, I know, yeah, I know, you know. Wait, oh, hold on. Let me fix that real quick. Let me help out with that a little bit. But since we didn't pick anybody there, it doesn't mean that I can't actually do this, right? So hold on. I haven't played in a while. All right, everybody in Alabama's back. So any extra info as far as DeMarco, as far as what you feel in regards to his upcoming season, in regards to the pick or any extra?
Well, like I said, I think if he does make the team, it would be on special teams play early. And then, you know, we'll just see if he finds his way onto the field. We all know that football is a game that has a lot of injuries, and safety next to running back is probably the second most violent position on the field with the way they're always coming up full speed and hitting people. So, you know, like I agree with you. You know, if you're going to take a chance on somebody in the seventh round, why not let it be somebody from one of the better SEC schools? Be nice if it was from the best SEC school, but, you know, he's not. So we'll take it. And so, you know, looking forward to see, you know, just what he can do in preseason, because that's a good thing about these preseason games and the starters not playing a lot. We'll actually get to see these guys in action against their drafted peers. And so, you know, like I said, when it gets to seventh-round pick, I'm not sitting here going to make a prediction either way, but, you know, just be glad to see what we're working with out of these guys.
Exactly. So last but not least, we have our last pick of the draft for the Atlanta Falcons, also a seventh-round pick, actually number 225. So let's go ahead and bring that person in now. With the last pick in the draft for the Atlanta Falcons, they picked Javon Gwynn, guard out of South Carolina. So let's see if we can take a look at some of his highlights before we go forward. Thank you. So that was Javon Gwynn from South Carolina. He is a guard. And one of the things, if you saw, if you're just paying attention to the highlights there, that I like, he finishes the whole play. Like, he's going all the way to the hill. He's trying to get you down to the ground, too. He's going to make sure you're not involved in that play anymore. Jordan, what was his draft profile like?
Yes, one thing about Mr. Gwynn, he was second team All-SEC, which is a good thing, you know, to be second team in the best conference in America. Mr. Gwynn, give me 1 second here. I have a little trouble with the old internet.
No worries.
He is 6 foot two, 297 pounds. As we said, a guard. Did 34 reps on the bench press, which is certainly good strength. From a weightlifting perspective, a little bit more on that here in a second. Quick note, scouts note here, Gwynn is a solid football player, but lacks the size, which is a major hindrance to him staying at guard. He'll likely need to prove he can snap the ball and move to center, but he will still be considered a bit undersized. He's a tenacious run blocker who can operate in multiple schemes but not be able to shine in any of them. He plays with a firm base and good body control and protection, but lacks the length and range to consistently protect gaps. Smith will be a one-position player, but he has enough talent and technique to compete for a roster spot at the center position. And so looks like he'll be a center, according to what the scouts are saying here. Strengths, four-year starter and well-respected teammate, was also a captain his last year there in South Carolina. Adequate first-step quickness as a zone blocker and a pull blocker. Plays under his pads with good body control, hand strength and foot movement to stay connected to blocks. Very firm when standing up to power rushers. Able to hold his hips and slide to recovery in pass sets. Weaknesses, undersized with short arms, unable to move bodies around as a drive blocker, will struggle to keep big guys from crossing his face, not enough range to protect widening rush gaps, and short arms allow rushers to work around his pass mirror. My thoughts are, you know, I mean, you take two seventh-round guys, why not take a couple guys out of the SEC and just see what you got. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see if the position change to center helps him and if he can make the team. If I had to guess, I would say that I would expect him to start the season on the practice squad because we have two centers in Drew Dahlman and Matt Hennessy, and most teams don't keep more than two centers. Even though we do know Hennessy has played some guards, so he has some positional versatility there. If he makes the active roster to start the season, then maybe we have something, you know, in that seventh-round pick. But I would guess practice squad would probably be how he starts his career.
So as of right now, they have him as the third left guard behind Hennessy and Bergeron right now, because they have Bergeron listed as a starter, Hennessy as a backup, and Gwynn as the third left guard. They got Dahlman as the starting center, Nuzil at the second, and I don't know who Jonathan Harrison is as the third center. So I'm pretty sure that's going to change over the next couple of months, but just interesting to just kind of see that's how they have it, you know, printed as of right now. Some of those strengths that you listed, Jordan, I feel definitely would kind of give him a chance, but probably at the center position just because of his stature. He could always, you know, put on a little weight, I guess, if he got down to it. Strength-wise, you already said he had, I think you said 34 reps. So that puts him in a, you know, pretty strength, you know, high up category as far as holding his own. But the stature part is going to hinder him at any other position because of what a defensive lineman can, you know, be able to get leverage because, you know, short arms, it's almost kind of like in basketball too, a little bit, you know, if you can't do this, you're going to get pushed around a little bit just because of inertia, basically. But he looks pretty tenacious. And like I say, he finishes the block on the run blocking side. Pass protection wise, That's probably why he would have to play center again, though. Again, he's not going to probably be able to hold up on the strong side of, as far as the line goes, possibly. But, again, it's a seventh-round pick, but you never know. You know what I'm saying? Again, if he stands out, you know, he beats some other people out. We would rather him beat people out than have people who can't play playing at the end of the day. And it's up to the coaches to be able to make that decision as far as that goes. So that was the last pick of the seventh round. Like I said, he is coming from an SEC team, so he has a little grit just based off of that. Any other extra information on Mr. Gwynn Jordan?
Well, no, not a whole lot. Just the fact that he, you know, according to the grading scale that NFL.com uses, he graded out of 60, which would be considered average backup or special teamer. Obviously, you don't keep a lot of linemen around just to play special teams. So, you know, they anticipate, you know, his career would be a backup. Who knows? You know, he could surprise. We've seen it happen before with the later round linemen. I do think being able to get leverage is going to be key for him with his lack of stature. But, you know, he has the strength. If he can learn leverage, then he should be able to move people having, you know, that strength that he has.
Yeah. 646-652-4479. We've got about 20 minutes left. So I do want to briefly go through some of the undrafted free agents that the Atlanta Falcons decided to sign. I'm going to go through them. And, Jordan, if you have any thoughts on them, we can go through that. They included, and let me see if I can make sure I pronounce some of these names correctly. On the edge, we got Akenna Nchukwu from Rice University, wide receiver Kalon Harris from Oklahoma Baptist, linebacker Mike Jones Jr. we got another running back, Carlos Washington Jr., a wide receiver, Justin Marshall from Buffalo, defensive back for Lando Jordan from Southeastern. He's invited to the rookie minicamp, by the way. And a kicker, Matt Trickett from Minnesota, also invited to the rookie minicamp invite. So those are some undrafted free agents. Every team draft after the draft, those who didn't get drafted, picks a few players. Any of these players stand out to you, Jordan, that you know of and for any particular reason? Now, this I didn't get a chance to really work on because I was sick, but I just wanted to make sure I mentioned it.
Yeah, I just want to mention a few other guys that were signed for rookie minicamp invites. Linebacker Jacquez Jones out of Kentucky. Quarterback Chase Bryce out of Appalachian State. Tight end Hunter Swoboda out of Ouachita Baptist was another guy invited as a rookie minicamp guy. And edge Kevion Bennett out of Arkansas State, center Jacob Gall out of Baylor, safety Javon Hicks is another rookie minicamp invite from Cincinnati. So that's going to complete the list there. Guys that are interesting to me would be, of course, I mean, anytime you got an SEC player, even though they're undrafted, so definitely, you know, interested to see what Mike Jones can do. He also played at Clemson before transferring to LSU. So, I mean, his pedigree is in playing a pretty good football program there. Also want to see undrafted the running back, the undrafted running back Carlos Washington out of Southeast Louisiana. You know, running back is one of the few spots that you could actually, you know, get a pretty good player undrafted. I mean, we've seen some undrafted running backs sometimes end up being, like, actual players. I mean, actual starters, actual contributors. So, interested to see what he could do there. Trying to get some numbers on him there. Not a lot of combine numbers out there on him. He's 5'1", 207 pounds. So he does have some weight on him. Oh, okay, I see it now. 14 bench reps of 225, which isn't the best. 40-yard dash time of 4.60. So, you know, it's interesting to see what he can do. Definitely has a lot of rushing yards in his career. They had some all-purpose touchdowns, and one of the things I found most interesting about him is he has actually quite a bit of kickoff return experience as well as averaging 5.9 yards per carry for an entire season. So he's probably the name that stands out the most to me just for some fact that, you know, you can actually have guys produce at that position, either whether it be, you know, obviously, he's probably not going to be able to find a lot of room on the field for us right now with us having two high-level running backs. We could always use return guys, you know what I mean, especially if he shows some ability, maybe take one to the house in the preseason or something like that. That's how he could possibly make the team. And just as added some depth, because I'm not sure, you know, what the update status of Caleb Huntley is, who had, you know, a pretty significant injury late in the season. I'd gather that he's probably not going to be ready to go, you know, right offhand. So, you know, like I said, with undrafted free agents, I mean, you know, you don't expect too much. You never know which one of these guys could end up surprising and make the team or make the practice squad, and then we see them actually make the team the following season or the season after that.
Talking about Washington, Carlos Washington, that you kind of took the words out of my mouth in regards to possible kickoff return as far as that goes. Because, yeah, depth-wise, you got Bijan Robinson, Tyler Algier, Cordell Patterson, Caleb Huntley, which is a mystery, Avery Williams, then Carlos Washington. This is the depth chart I'm giving you. And then we got B.J. Baylor. So we got a lot of running backs there. So somebody is not going to be playing, obviously, if he ends up making the team. As of right now, some of those unsigned free agents are on the depth chart as of the moment. But, again, things will happen over time, I guess. Mike Jones is on the depth chart as the 1, 2, 3, 4th weak side linebacker. Washington, we just talked about. Xavier Malone is on there. Justin Marshall as the 4th wide receiver. Harris is the 3rd wide receiver on the depth chart as of now. So you just never know when training camp comes and goes who performs, who gives the coaches a reason to say, yeah, we got to make sure we get him some reps because he can do some things, right? Special teams, of course, gives you that initial opportunity to prove yourself that you can, you know, do your job and whatnot. And then if something happens injury-wise or anything like that, you can step up and, you know, continue to prove yourself. Again, depth has been an issue for us for a long time. We got to fix that. We're going to win for a long period of time. You got to have players that can be able to step in and you not miss a beat. And we have not had that for such a long time. Maybe these last 3 years will get us to that point to where now here we are. We got some positions finalized. And if worst-case scenario happens, we're not going to lose a lot of juice when the next player steps into that role, whether it be on offense or defense. So we're going to see as far as that goes. But undrafted free agents have helped a lot of teams. And you got a lot of undrafted free agents that have had great NFL careers too, right? You just never know sometimes. So we'll find out in the near future. So, guys, hopefully everybody enjoyed just that portion. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say real quick, a couple of other guys that I was looking at with this undrafted free agent class is, let me see if I can get his name right here. Ikema Inechukwu out of Rice. Back-to-back seasons of 4.5 sacks in each season, as well as over 20 tackles for a loss. 23 tackles for a loss, to be exact. 10.5 sacks over his college career, and that's with only playing 4 games in 2020 due to injury. I'm always looking for, you know, more edge rusher-type guys. Another guy, Kevion Bennett out of Arkansas State is another guy that's an edge guy. Like I said, you know, I'm always looking for edge rushers on this team just for some fact that that's been a weakness we talked about early in the show. Hard to find a lot of stats coming out of Arkansas State. Let's see, I think I may have some stuff here, though. Okay, here we go. So career 19 sacks, which is pretty good. Had 5.5 last year, 7 the year before, and I didn't realize this, but he actually started at Tennessee. So he actually has some SEC experience as well. Had 4.5 sacks last year in Tennessee. So 6'2", 236 pounds. So he's an undersized type guy, more of a outside linebacker, edge type guy, but could be a guy who could also play some stand-up linebacker in a 4-3 style defense, have that position of versatility. So those are two of the other guys I'm looking at as far as undrafted guys. I'll be watching for them in the preseason to see if they show, you know, any flashes of potential to make this roster.
Appreciate that, Jordan. So, guys, like I said, I hope everybody enjoyed the show tonight in regards to just talking Falcons. We appreciate a caller earlier. I believe I heard Matthew or Matt earlier from Atlanta calling in. And those who did get a chance to watch live, obviously, and those who will watch after the fact, again, I apologize for not really being able to promote tonight's show. I've been sick all day, but I wanted to make sure I got the show done.
And I've been working.
And Mr. Jordan's been working, obviously. You can see the suit and tie there. We're trying to get back regular, guys. We're coming soon. And by the way, just to mention that, hopefully tomorrow night we're going to do our Atlanta Hawks end of season show to talk about the Hawks and finally finishing their season. Fortunately, didn't go as far as we wanted, but we're going to talk about that. Now, if you still haven't seen the interviews we did with Bob Rathman and Steve Holman, play-by-play guys that are on Valley and 92.9 The Game, respectively, make sure you go and watch that on the IMTN Worldwide Radio YouTube channel. It's episodes 122 and episodes 123. Make sure you go check that out. But while we have a few minutes, I wanted to kind of get into something that Jordan really wanted to tap into. I'm going to go ahead and pop it up here on the screen for everybody to see. And maybe you agree or disagree, but...
Agree.
So let's talk about that real quick. So if everybody knows, the other night Acuna got dinged in the shoulder, contusion. He played, though. He's been playing. He hit a home run, I believe, tonight, actually, right? Best player in the NL, best player that the Braves have. But over the last few years, he's been hit a lot, and he's missed games because of it. And each time it's happened, there's not the uproar or the angst that you would expect from the manager, Mr. Brian Snicker, for some reason. And we all have seen there's some contention there. And I don't know what it is in particular, but the oldest rule in baseball is when you have one of your main players get hit or any of your players get hit, the next inning, your pitcher has to hit the first guy up. It has to happen. Because otherwise, again, the oldest rule in baseball, it's going to keep happening again and again and again. It's a respect thing at a certain point. But the other part of it is it's a matter of, when are we going to just have an all-out brawl to protect our players? You know what I'm saying? Again, it's a matter of, you know, suspensions happen. It's not like we have, you know, again, I just want to talk about that really briefly. We got about, you know, 5-7 minutes we can chat about it a little bit. If you're a baseball fan, Atlanta Braves fan, but when your star player is getting hit on a regular basis, and it's been happening for a couple of years now, when is enough enough? Because if Major League Baseball isn't going to address it and do anything about it, right, and your upper management is not going to come out and say anything about it, the actual manager is not going to actually do anything about it, you know, well, what happens next? You know, do people have to, you know, put things in their own hands, so to speak? That's not going to be a good thing. So let's talk about that a little bit. 646-652-4479, if you want to try to call in before the show ends and talk about it, or the chat line. But, Jordan, what's your perspective on that?
My perspective to that is very similar to yours, sir. For one, everybody knows that the former Atlanta Braves manager, Bobby Cox, is the most ejected manager in the history of baseball. And I just gotta believe that if Acuna were to continue to be hit like that and he was still the manager, that he would have gone ballistic, that he would have went out there, he'd have cussed a few umpires out, and he would have been tossed from the ballgame. If So, it, like you said, I don't understand why Snicker doesn't do it. You mentioned a good point that he's supposed to be an old school guy. Well, that's old school baseball, retaliating when somebody hits your guy. Why are you not old school about that, Snick? With that being said, though, sir, I agree with you completely. If he's not going to do anything, if Major League Baseball is not going to do anything, what you got to do is the next time Acuña gets hit, if the team needs to all run out there in unison, guys coming out of the dugout, guys coming out of the bullpen, and you go out there and you start throwing haymakers, you start throwing hooks, you start throwing uppercuts, and you start knocking some guys out from the other team, whether that be the Mets, whether that be the Marlins. I don't care who it is. You cannot continuously let somebody go at and hit your best player. I don't care if he celebrates home runs. Get over it. If you don't want to celebrate home runs,
don't let him hit a home
out.
Run. It's very simple.
Right? Get him out. But you have got to protect your guy. If this guy gets hit in the elbow and chips, and gets a bone chip or breaks a wrist or breaks a hand and is gone for a long time, you're not the same baseball team. This is not that team that won the World Series without him. This is a different ball club. We need Acuña. He's the best player in the National League. And outside of maybe a couple of guys that play for the Angels, the best player in all the game of baseball. You got to knock some people out, Braves. Stop allowing these teams to hit your guy. Do not let these folks punk you. Stand up strong. Take the suspension. Do what you got to do. And if ownership was worth anything, they would cover some fines and suspensions if and when that does happen. Just a couple quick notes before you elaborate on that, Chris. I did see a breaking news while we were on that Kyle Wright was placed on the injury list with the shoulder injury. Also, the Braves beat the Marlins today 14-6, looked like a football score there.
There you go.
Guess who had five RBIs tonight, Chris?
Yeah, I heard the rumor. I heard Marcell Ozuna might have finally broken out of that slump. Go ahead with the details.
Yeah, 5 RBIs for Marcell Ozuna tonight, which is quite incredible. 2 home runs, if I can recall correctly. I'm trying to pull up a proper box score here because the box score I was looking at did not show home runs. But he was 3 out of 5. 5 RBIs and 3 runs scored. So he may have hit 3 home runs if I'm looking at this correctly. He's a 2 at least.
I know he had a grand slam.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He had a grand slam.
Okay.
So that,
but if he had a grand slam, then yeah, it was 2 home runs, a grand slam and a solo home run. And
yeah,
then he scored another run on his other hit. So, I don't know what to make of that, but it's encouraging, I guess. Better to see him hitting the ball out of the ballpark and driving in runs than going 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts.
Hopefully he'll be able to sustain it, because I also think I saw Michael Harris get hurt again. He don't look like the injury I saw don't look like he's going to play for at least a month. So hopefully this will be a good thing for Ozuna to really be out of that slump, because we're going to need something, you know. So this is his opportunity to stay. As we get other players, coming back, because eventually, Travis will be back, eventually, and others, whatnot. Hate that Kyle is going on the list like that. But we'll see. But again, this is all even more important with Acuña. We need, again, this is the year that we're going to have both Acuña and Izzy, hopefully, the whole season. You can't keep having him potentially having a wrist or a hand or a head or a shoulder broken because he's getting hit by all these pitches for no reason. And then there's no retaliation. A retaliation will make sure that people know don't hit him, because there's going to be consequences and repercussions. as a great comic once said back in the day. So that being said, I want to say again, thanks for all who did get the chance to watch the show tonight. Please subscribe to the IMTN Worldwide Radio YouTube channel. Make sure you do that. Follow both of us on Twitter, Intellect ATL for myself, and Jordan 23 ATL right there at the bottom if you can see that. You can also follow on Facebook and Instagram for IMTN Worldwide Radio as well. Jordan, can you tell people where they can follow you on the internet?
Best place to follow me at is on Twitter, at Jordan 23 ATL. Do a lot of chopping up about all of our Atlanta sports teams on there. One of my more recent posts, and I still been meaning to add a few more videos to it, is just some of the highlights from our final game with the Atlanta Hawks, which we will hopefully talk about tomorrow. We'll definitely talk about it in our next show. And so, yeah, that'd be the best place to follow me, man. We certainly appreciate all you guys listening, both the people that listen live as well as our podcast people, which I'm sure many will be or be podcast people this week, since we just didn't really have time to pump and promote this thing ahead of time. But we appreciate you guys that listen after the fact just as much as we appreciate the live listeners. You know, just like I said, just thank everybody for all the support over time. We're continuing to bring shows and trying our best to fit in, you know, shows regardless of our busy schedule. But last but not least, I want to thank God for giving me the breath that I breathe to talk about these Atlanta and these Georgia sports that I love. Peace up. Time down, baby.
Thank you, sir. Make sure y'all tune in tomorrow, the Atlanta Hawks end of season show on IMTN Worldwide Radio. And with that being said, we'll talk to y'all tomorrow.